happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus was.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. No guests, so we can have more time in our talkback segment for you to call in and share your points of view. We're going to be listening a little later on in the program to a piece that gives us an understanding of how much of a police state we are today. It's called Checkmate to Humanity. I'll be sharing the latest on why I believe that the bombing of Syria is a bad idea, but I'll also be sharing the ideas of William Boardman from Reader Support News, also the broader stakes of Syrian crisis from Ray McGovern from Consortium News, and Syria, Obama's pretext for war. The rebels are in possession of chemical weapons, Phil Greaves from Global Research. Also today, the most bizarre SWAT raids you could imagine, and it's very common, and a commentary from Vandana Shiva. Dr. Shiva has written an article entitled The Seeds of Suicide, How Monsanto Destroys Farming. As you see, we have a lot on our plate. And some of you, by the way, have been having a hard time in the last several days to get in on our website. And we are upgrading it and expanding it as quickly as possible. In the interim, remember that telephone number I've been giving you that you can call in? And you can listen. You can also listen on your mobile device from TuneIn app, Stitcher app, iTunes. But the phone is the easiest thing to do if you're ever having trouble getting on. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. And it was interesting, since we had an enormous surge of people, and we found out why. I just got the local coverage of the different PBS stations carrying my latest special, and it's just huge. And in that program, I mentioned, you know, I do a radio show and people should tune in. They are. It's just more than what we had ever anticipated. But I was just given this report. I'm not on the road until next week. It says, Gary, the people listening, unique listeners yesterday over the telephone, according to the service, was 9,265 new people came on board yesterday. And last month you had 486,826,000 people listening over the telephone. That's a whole lot of people. You can put it in perspective. That's more than all the people listening to all five Pacifica stations combined. All right? So that's the future. Let's go to the present. Long-term nutritional supplementation reduces progression of macular degeneration. This comes from the peer-reviewed journal Ophthalmology. And they show that if you use a particular supplement over a long period of time, mainly antioxidants and zinc, you can reduce the opportunity for age-related macular degeneration. This was a study called the Age-Related Eye Disease Study, 4,757 people in it. It went on for 7 years, and they found if you were taking vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, you had a much better outcome for your macula and for your eye health. That's good. I've mentioned probably 100 times, if you're over the age of 40, have once a year, twice a year, ideally, your blood chemistry hormones checked and inflammatory markers checked. Homocysteine at the top end of the list, because if it's elevated, you run a greater risk of dying. And you wouldn't know it's elevated. You can't feel it. This is in the current Journal of Gerontology. It's a series on biological science, medical science. Here's what it says. Quote, there is an association between higher levels of homocysteine and greater risk of frailty and early death in older men. And they looked at what it means to have homocysteine levels of 15 or more. So ideally, you want it around 5 to 10. That's okay. You start getting up there, you run a risk of dying. Now, if it is high, it's not difficult to get it down. First, get off meat and sugar, but then start to exercise. Take micrograms amounts, about 400 micrograms of folic acid, 1 milligram of B12, about 300 milligrams of B6, and 2,000 milligrams of trimethylglycine. That will help bring it down, and that could save some lives. Something else that can keep you from dying over a 16-year period, according to an article in the Annals of Internal Medicine, quote, a study of older U.S. adults that uncovered a protective effect of high plasma phospholipid omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids, that's the omega-3s, against the risk of dying over a 16-year follow-up period. Well, that's good news. So I'm going to suggest 1,500 milligrams in the morning and 1,500 milligrams in the afternoon, either from fish or from vegan sources like flaxseed. How much of a greater risk did you have? 27% lower risk of dying from all causes over a 16-year period. Hey, if you could have 27% greater chance of living an extra 16 years, why not do it? As we know, diabetes is one of the fastest spreading epidemics in the world. This is in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It reports a link between decreased levels of melatonin, that's the hormone that you secrete at night from the pineal gland in your brain, but we're not secreting enough of it. If we do, we get sleep-induced hormone production. But you need dark. You need black. And that's why if there's any light at all, light from your television, from your digital clock, from outside, you're not going to get enough of the melatonin secretion. Put a little eye pad on your eyes so you can get that good night's sleep. This was from the Nurses' Health Study, and they found that those who did not get a good night's sleep simply did not have the melatonin secretion, and that leads to a greater risk of diabetes. So to protect yourself from diabetes, make sure that you are getting your melatonin. Now, how can you do that? Don't eat anything within 2 hours of going to bed. Make sure there's no light at all in your room, and that will help. But you could also take 1 or 2 milligrams of melatonin before you go to bed, about an hour before. That will help as well. And there's a new article in the Journal of the American Medical Association that outlines how hospitals are making money from mistakes they make in the operating room. Quote, hospitals make more money from their own mistakes because insurers pay them for the longer stays and extra care the patients need to treat surgical complications that could have been prevented. The article states, quote, the study is based upon detailed analysis of 34,000 people who had surgery in 1 year in 12 hospitals, and then how many of them had complications, and then how much more that those complications cost them. And here's where it's interesting. The median length of stay for those patients quadrupled to 14 days, and the hospital revenue averaged $30,000 more for patients. So, It's very profitable for the surgeons and for the hospital if they make a mistake and you get extra medication and extra treatment. I think that's just absurd. If they make a mistake, you shouldn't have to pay anything, nor your insurer. It should come on them, not you. A major killer in the United States is atherosclerosis. It goes by other names, hardening of the arteries, blocked arteries. But it comes down to the idea that underlying most causes of heart attacks and strokes is atherosclerosis. If you were to ask your average cardiologist, what exactly is atherosclerosis and what exactly causes it? More often than not, they would tell you, well, there's some occlusive sclerotic disease going on there, and it's a blockage, and that's what we have to deal with. But that's not the complete stories. Yes, doctors will try to associate atherosclerotic lesions as a clog consisting of mainly fat, cholesterol, and platelets that have all aggregated, clumped together on the inner arterial wall. And that's why they tell them, eat less fat, take a statin drug, and use a baby aspirin to prevent arterial platelet aggregation. Here's why I believe that this is misinformation, certainly not complete information, and doesn't put the pieces together properly. We are not preventing the strokes or the heart disease or the pathologies from this that we should. What we really have is we have an underlying set of pathologies that cause atherosclerotic lesions to form and progress. And if the average person lives long enough, they're going to end up with having damage to their arteries. And then they end up with the stents and bypass surgery or just dropping dead of a heart attack, all of which is preventable. Now, during normal aging, the processes of aging damages your blood vessels. And over at least 4 decades, the standard treatment for coronary atherosclerosis has been bypass the blocked arteries. Recuperation from this procedure, like with Bill Clinton, takes months. And then it doesn't reverse anything. You still have what really caused it, the chronic inflammation. And with that comes memory loss and all forms of problems. So stenting open, narrowed coronary arteries is not the answer. Yet that is what we do because that's what they know to do and that's what's profitable. Take an honest look at the scientific literature, their own literature, and you'll find it's not about a clot. It's about homocysteine, fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, glucose, cholesterol, insulin, iron, the LDL, the low-density lipoproteins, and triglycerides. Testosterone, low. Those are the factors that contribute to increasing your risk of a heart attack and a stroke. Now, there are thousands of these studies, and they validate everything I just said. So what we have to know today is that heart conditions are multifactorial, and they are a process. And taking a statin drug as the sole therapy to prevent and treat coronary atherosclerosis is just not going to do it. But that's what the official version of, here's what you got to do. Take this and you'll be all right. Not true. Arteries are the blood vessels that bear the full force of each heartbeat. Most people think of arteries as flexible tubes whose only function is to carry blood that flows continuously throughout the body. In fact, according to Bill Falloon, arteries are dynamic and functioning muscular structures that, when healthy, expand and contract to facilitate circulation and maintain optimal blood pressure. The outer layer of the artery comprises mostly connective tissue and provides structural containment for the two layers beneath. The middle area comprises elastic, smooth muscle that provides the contractile strength to make possible the artery's expansion and contraction with each heartbeat. The inner layer that I've discussed many times on this program is known as the endothelium, and it comprises a thin area of endothelial cells whose integrity is crucial if atherosclerosis to be prevented. Now, poor health habits and normal aging result in endothelial dysfunction, and that's a process in which endothelium boundary is broken, and arterial flexibility is diminished, and abnormal platelet aggregation occurs, and atherosclerotic lesions form in response to the arterial wall injury. Now, the two prime factors involved in occlusive arterial disease are abnormal platelet aggregation and endothelial dysfunction. And when the endothelium is not functioning properly, our platelets, our blood clotting cells, become dangerously overactive, and this can cause a sudden arterial blood clot or contribute to progression of atherosclerosis by stimulating inflammation. Now, the primary mechanism involved in endothelial dysfunction is the depletion of nitric oxide, and often caused by the oxidation of LDL and other blood components. Now, nitric oxide, nitric, N-I-T-R-I-C, nitric oxide, is produced by endothelial cells. It regulates vascular elasticity, maintains cardiac contraction, prevents vessel injury, and helps protect against atherosclerosis. So as we age, the endothelial function becomes altered, and due to a variety of insults, the depletion of nitric oxide occurs in the endothelium. Now, one consequence of nitric oxide depletion is the inability of arteries to expand and contract with youthful elasticity, and the continued stiffening and occlusion of aged arteries is the number one health risk that people in Western society face. In order to maintain healthy arterial dilation, the endothelium has to manufacture enough nitric oxide. So impairment in nitric oxide release by the aging endothelium causes arterial dysfunction. So the therapies used by today's mainstream cardiologists, aspirin, statin, and certain anti-hypertensive drugs, they have a beneficial effect on the endothelium in the short term, but they only postpone a serious vascular event. If a person lives long enough, the chronic depletion of endothelial nitric oxide results in impairment of arterial function and progression restriction of blood flow to vital parts of the body. The endothelial cells line the arteries, the veins, the arterioles, the capillaries of the vascular system. So, what do you do? What can you do to change this whole picture? I've given you a little bit extra attention to this because it's important to understand. Here's what you can do. First, preventatively, give up the things that cause the destruction. What are those? Meat? Yes. Also, give up coffee, sugar, fried foods, refined carbohydrates. That will make an enormous difference. That will help you. Then start bringing in what will repair the damage. Things such as L-carnitine, coenzyme Q10, NADH, vitamin E in mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols, vitamin C, quercetin, resveratrol. All of these, along with hawthorn berry extract, are great for the arterial sclerosis, plaques, and the endothelial dysfunction, PPQ. These are the things that we need, and this will help de-age your heart and give you back your vitality and your youth. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition, and we have a whole lot to share with you, and I'm going to give you a short commentary from Vandana Shiva. But before, I just realized something. Most dogs sleep about 20 hours a day. Their food is prepared for them. Their meals are provided at no cost. They visit the doctor, if you're a really good caregiver, once a year for an annual checkup. And by the way, if any medicine like heartworm is needed, they get it for free. And the dog lives in a nice neighborhood, in a nice house. It's much larger than they need. And they're required to do no upkeep. For example, if a dog makes a mess, you clean it up, or someone cleans it up. The dog has the choice of luxurious places to sleep. The dog receives the accommodations absolutely free. And the dog is living like a king and has absolutely no expenses whatsoever. All of his costs are picked up by others who earn a living. I was just thinking about this, and it suddenly hit me like a ton of bricks. My dog is a congressman. Now, from Vandana Shiva, from our environmental segment today. Monsanto's talk of technology tries to hide its real objectives of control over seed, where genetic engineering is a means to control seed. According to Vandana Shiva, Monsanto is an agricultural company. Here's what they say, quote, "We apply innovation and technology to help farmers around the world produce more while conserving more. Producing more, conserving more, improving farmers' lives." You think? These are the promises Monsanto's India's website makes, alongside pictures of smiling, prosperous farmers from one particular state. Now, this is a desperate attempt by Monsanto and its PR machinery to de-link the epidemic of farmer suicides in India from the company's growing control over cottonseed supply. 95% of India's cottonseed is now controlled by Monsanto. Control over seed is the first link in the food chain because seed is the source of life. When a corporation controls seed, it controls life, especially the life of farmers. Monsanto's concentrated control over the seed sector in India, as well as across the world, is very worrying. This is what happens when this occurs. This is what connects farmer suicides in India to Monsanto versus Percy Schmeiser in Canada, to Monsanto versus Bowman in the U.S., and to farmers in Brazil suing Monsanto for $2 billion for unfair collection of royalty. Through patents on seed, Monsanto has become the life lord of our planet, collecting rents for life's renewal from farmers, the original breeders. Now, patents on seed are illegitimate because putting a toxic gene into a plant cell is not creating or inventing a plant. These are seeds of deception, the deception that Monsanto is the creator of seeds and life, the deception that while Monsanto sues farmers and traps them into debt, it pretends to be working for farmers' welfare, and the deception that Monsanto's feed the world their seeds. No, genetically modified organisms are failing to control pests and weeds and have instead led to the emergence of super pests and super weeds. The entry of Monsanto in the Indian seed sector was made possible with the 1988 seed policy imposed by the World Bank, requiring the government of India to deregulate the seed sector. Five things changed with Monsanto's entry. First, Indian companies were locked into joint ventures and licensing arrangements, and concentration over the seed sector increased. Second, seed, which had been the farmer's common resource, became the intellectual property of Monsanto, for which it started collecting royalties, and thus raising the cost of seed. Third, open pollinated cotton seed was displaced by hybrids, including GMO hybrids. A renewable source became a non-renewable patented commodity. Fourth, cotton, which had earlier been grown as a mixture with food crops, now had to be grown as a monoculture with higher vulnerability to pests and disease and drought and crop failure. And lastly, Monsanto started to subvert India's regulatory process and, in fact, started to use public resources to push its non-renewable hybrids and GMOs through the so-called public-private partnerships. In 1995, Monsanto introduced its BT technology in India through a joint venture with the Indian company Mycobo. In 1997-98, Monsanto started open-field trials of its GMO BT cotton illegally and announced that it would be selling the seeds commercially the following year. India has rules for regulating GMOs since 1989 under the Environmental Protection Act. It is mandatory to get approval from the Genetic Engineer Approval Committee under the Ministry of Environment for GMO trials. The Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology sued Monsanto in the Supreme Court of India, and Monsanto could not start the commercial sales of its BT cotton seeds until 2002. And after the damning report of India's Parliamentary Committee on BT crops in August 2012, the panel of technical experts appointed by the Supreme Court of India recommended a 10-year moratorium on field trials of all GM food and termination of all ongoing trials of transgenic crops. But it had changed Indian agriculture already. Monsanto's seed monopolies, the destruction of alternatives, the collection of super profits in the form of royalties, and the increasing vulnerability of monocultures has created a context of debt, suicides, and agrarian distress, which is driving the farmer suicide epidemic in India. This systemic control has been intensified with BT cotton, and that is why most suicides are in the cotton belt. An internal advisory by the Agricultural Ministry of India in January of this past year had this to say to the cotton-growing states in India, quote, "Cotton farmers are in deep crisis since shifting to BT cotton. The spate of farmer suicides in 2011 and 12 has been particularly severe among BT cotton farmers," end quote. The highest acreage of BT cotton is in one province, and this is also where the highest farmer suicides are. Suicides increased after BT cotton was introduced. Monsanto's royalty extraction and the high cost of seed and chemicals have created a debt trap. And according to the government of India data, nearly 75% rural debt is due to purchase inputs. As Monsanto's profits grow, farmers' debt grows. It is this systemic sense that Monsanto's seeds are seeds of suicide. The ultimate seeds of suicide is Monsanto's patented technology to create sterile seeds, called Terminator technology by the media. Sterile seed technology is a type of gene-use restriction technology, meaning you can only grow it once. A Monsanto representative admitted that they were, quote, "the patient's diagnostician and physician all in one." In writing the patient's patents on life forms for microorganisms to plants in an agreement, this is what it meant. And that's according to Vandana Shiva. So how many people have committed suicide in India? Over 265,000. Now, wouldn't you think that if 265,000 people were committing suicide in one area in a short period of time, that someone would make that an important issue? You bet. But not in the United States, not in our media. 250,000 people committing suicide? No. Not when the person who is responsible for running a corporation is a major political campaign, contributed to Democrats and Republicans, and a major advertiser on television. You're not going to hear a story about it. And that's unfortunate. But that is part of the seeds of destruction. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, for those of you who've been concerned about we're becoming a police state. And by the way, when we started discussing this, no one believed that. Now, virtually every major progressive that I speak with in the world knows that this is happening. Of course, the people over on MSNBC that aren't worth listening to or watching, they're still opposed to this notion, but we're not. We're looking at the facts, the hard facts. I'm going to play for you right now a little segment that will give you a better indication of what's happening. Please listen in.
For thousands of years, the Earth has been our home. But soon, it will become our prison. A criminal elite, composed of powerful bankers and owners of large corporations, governed the world from the shadows. And they are one step away from reaching their darkest dreams. 1. Create a world government dominated by an oligarchic elite. 2. Establish a global electronic currency in order to divide the world into two kinds of people, masters and slaves. 3. Implant a chip in every person with its biometric information, its personal details, and the electronic money that it possesses in order to obtain the absolute control of population. 4. Reduce the population to control it more easily and better manage natural resources. The elite is on the point of realizing the dream that all big criminals have lodged along history. Obtain absolute power in the world. Forever. How were they going to do it? Believe that they can do it through three simultaneous strategic movements. First, economic collapse. The elite will create a large international financial crisis, which will culminate in an economic collapse. Then, many people will lose their job and their savings in Europe and USA. After protests grow, the elite will create false anti-system groups that will cause episodes of chaos in order that the population claim the establishment of strong order and authority. The evolution of collapse in Europe and USA will follow different paths. In Europe, the elite generates idea that any lone country cannot overcome the crisis. A centralized European government is born, and national sovereignty is reduced to minimum. Public functions of the state are privatized. Big corporations turn into the state. The political class is discredited. Some politicians and bankers are going to trial, but it is all a trick. The elite promotes manipulated leaders emerge from protesters for channeling protests and provide an illusion of democratic regeneration and hope. European government is occupied by technocrats who replace old inefficient and corrupt politicians. An apparently democratic European state is established but governed by an untouchable elite. In the United States, the crisis provokes serious riots. Armed groups fight against the state, many of them manipulated by the elite. There are crimes and innocent victims. Federal government establishes state of emergency and martial law to regain control. FEMA camps begin to operate. Dissidents and protesters are imprisoned, accused of terrorism and unpatriotic activities. Arrests and mass repression in name of security. Fascist police state with stars and stripes. The strategy of economic collapse culminates with the introduction of mandatory service to the state in USA and Europe. The mass of people who live in poverty is forced to work for the state in exchange for accommodation and food. The most antisocial people are selected to perform control tasks such as policemen or soldiers and repress the population. Government promotes reports and denunciations among citizens in exchange for benefits and recognition. At some point, during process of economic collapse, starts the second strategic maneuver, health crisis. An epidemic is raised to consolidate the process of mass population control. Mass media exaggerate situation and generate a state of panic. Demonstrations are prohibited under the pretext that help spread the epidemic. The epidemic is used to eliminate, silently, political dissidents. With the advance of the epidemic, the authorities establish that the only way to control it is to implement a chip to monitorize every citizen and quickly detect new outbreaks. The chip is also used to store all the data of each person, its physical and psychological profile, and its electronic money. Physical money disappears by deemed unsanitary, unsafe and uncomfortable. These ideas are implanted in citizens' mind. Chip equals money. Chip equals medicines. No chip equals death. Combined with the chip, internet and system of cloud computing will be the basis of mass control. All information is saved in remote servers, a way of citizens' control to reach absolute domination of the world. Union of internet and chip becomes Big Brother. Third strategic maneuver, war. First phase, regional wars. During economic collapse and implementation of population control measures, regional wars have grown along Middle East, Africa, and Latin America. These conflicts may start after another false flag attack, which causes the fall in stock markets and be the final trigger for the economic collapse, or even the beginning of the epidemic if it's a biological attack. In this phase, great powers don't fall in direct conflict between them, in the style of wars in Vietnam, Korea or Afghanistan. Second phase, World War III. After several years of regional wars, and once achieved total control of population, the Great War broke out between powers. Large masses of population, recruited by force, ascend to a chaotic and devastating war. Nuclear weapons tactics, chemical, biological, and climatic, are used on several big cities to eliminate part of world's population. Third phase, peace. The war ends when charismatic leaders, controlled by the elite, appear as spiritual saviors of the world and sign a peace based on unity of all nations under a single world government. Survivors, exhausted and submitted, accepted the ultimate establishment of a single world government controlled by an untouchable and semi-divine elite. The masters of the world already have a submissive mass of slaves controlled by high tech, and no one that opposed them. Nevermore. Total duration of this process can last between 10 and 30 years. Our world is on the brink of slavery and destruction. Governs us an elite group of psychos without any respect for human life, and at their service have an army of heartless and corrupt henchmen capable of anything to maintain their status. Are we going to allow these bastards eliminate us, or we are going to fight our survival? If we want to stop their plans, we must establish four immediate objectives. 1. Convince security forces to protect people and don't obey the elite. 2. Attack and discredit mass media responsible for spreading the lies of the elite. 3. Prosecute and punish severely to the political class that has served these criminals. All of them. They should fear the people. Forever. 4. Prevent deployment of chip. It's the key point. What can you do on a personal level? 1. Inform maximum number of people as possible on the plans of the elite. 2. Denounce manipulations of mass media. Use its own speakers. 3. Devote 1 hour per day to fight against elite plans as if it were a personal challenge. 4. Clean your mind of false values that have instilled you the system. 5. Don't follow blindly to any leader, by good it seems. Be yourself, the sole leader of your actions. 6. Don't fall in racial or ethnic hatred. It's a trap to divide the people. 7. Don't allow them to send you to any of their dirty wars. If you are going to hold a weapon, do it against them. 8. At this moment, all rulers in the world are illegitimate. Therefore, disobey this rotted authority as much as you can.
Just one of the different sources. Everything that was said in this film is actually accurate. None of it is conspiratorial. It's real. Look, for example, at the look at the weapons of mass destruction. Look at the consequences to the people who became homeless, over 4 million in Iraq. Look at the people who were denied quality of life in Afghanistan and other countries. Look at the number of children that died because of sanctions, Clinton sanctions in Iraq, 500,000. Over 1.5 million people have died in Iraq because of our presence there. How exactly have we made the country better? How has causing internal strife that is now escalating, just in the last 30 days, over 3,000 people killed, how does that make it a more stable place and a better place for the people living, either Shia or Sunni or Kurds? It does not. Look at what we're doing in Syria. Yes, people died. Here's a question. How is it that the greatest concentrations of children were in one area that historically, because of the carnage in that area, the Civil War, it had been desolate? Why is it that many of the boys were shown naked and the girls in dresses? There's too many inconsistencies. For many of us, we will acknowledge deaths, yes, but not yet acknowledge who was responsible. It may have been Assad. I doubt it. He would have known the outrage from everyone and the immediate consequences. This just reeks of a false flag of having Saudi Arabia and the Mossad through the most radical elements of Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabists, who are the jihadists, and the Sharia law advocates. They would have been the most likely to have carried these out, and Al-Qaeda is aligned with them. And so why is it we're not looking for the truth? Those who are, you don't hear them invited on any of the programs. Let me give you just an extension of this. This is from William Boardman. Here's what he has to say. Are you saying that doing nothing in Syria is the best option? Answer. The unpleasant reality in Syria is that there are no good choices for the U.S. or much of anyone else. But the crushing reality is that, comparatively, the U.S. and perhaps the world will be better off keeping Assad in power for the time being, rather than coping with the likely chaos flowing uncontrollably from any other outcome. There is no good reason to make a bad situation worse. It is likely to get worse all on its own, and unimaginably worse if the government starts to fail. But wouldn't it be good if the rebels won? Not likely. No one knows who the rebels are with any certainty, except that we know they are anything but united, coherent as a force. We don't even know if any of them have goals worthy of supporting. There are many rebel groups with as many interests, most of them lethal, and to each other, to their neighbors and everyone else. And many of them are with Al-Qaeda. But getting rid of Assad is good all by itself, isn't it? Of course, just like getting rid of Saddam Hussein was good all by itself. Wake up. Have you no memory? Unfortunately, we have been cursed with leadership that chooses to ignore the reality that nothing exists all by itself. Everything is interconnected, which should be obvious to anyone. But Obama and Kerry don't seem to get it any better than Bush Cheney did. Their common assumption that they can control reality and determine outcomes is a hallmark of hubris or madness. For all the mindless destruction the Iraq War has visited on everyone involved, except the insulated commanders, the indefensible result today is that Iraq has suffered and continues to suffer far more than it would have had Saddam remained in power. War crimes tend to turn out badly. So we should leave Assad in power? The first problem with that question is the assumption that it's up to we, us, whoever us is. Unquestionably, we can intervene in any horrific way we choose, and no one can stop us. But that's where our control of events ends, and the benefits of any intervention are hard to identify, most likely because they are non-existent. Of course, an attack might briefly satisfy the mindless impulse to do something, even if we all accomplished something that is tough by teaching the Syrians, they better not kill Syrians unless they want us to come in there and kill more Syrians. Because the only outcome is there will be a lot of innocent men, women, and children killed. Now here's an aside. For all of those rabid neocons who just love to embrace violence, John McCain at the top of the list, but Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and all of them, do you value an American child more than a Syrian child? If you were deeply offended, as you should have been, by the senseless death by gassing of an innocent Syrian child, how could you be any less incensed by the senseless death of an Iraqi child, or a drone killing an Afghan child, or a Pakistani child, or a Yemeni child, or a Somali child? How could you be any less incensed with 500,000, a half a million children dying? Where was your voice when they died of malnutrition? Where's your voice when they're dying or being mutilated by depleted uranium? Where is your where's your voice when in Fallujah over 1,000 civilians died? Where? Where was your outrage? So you're selective, you're very monotheistic in your concept of what a life is worth. So exactly how are we supposed to teach them something based upon the premise that they, which has not been proven, and if the proof is anything from Israel or anything from the Mossad, that is insane, because that is a pathologically dysfunctional group that is at the heart of many of our major crises. They're not to be trusted because their word in the past has been wrong. So we're going to teach the Syrians a lesson by killing them. So innocent civilians get killed. We teach a lesson by killing more innocent civilians. That's what kind of logic? And yet that is what the mass of Americans want, and the media and the administration. Where is there any sanity left? I don't see it. And also, why haven't we been outraged by the same Mossad and the same Israeli and Netanyahu and Likud party that had no qualms about using a banned weapon of mass destruction against all international treaties, white phosphorus, against the Palestinians? Oh, and we used it also in the Balkans. Oh, and we used napalm. And we also used depleted uranium. All of these have contributed to over a million deaths. Where's the outrage? Or is our outrage selective? Also, from Ray McGovern. Ray's an interesting person. Go to my archives and listen to a program I just did with Ray McGovern. And you'll see what he has to say about Syria and the Middle East. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to make sure that I give time for our talk back. I promised I would, so our time is now. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Time for talk back. Again, we are experiencing some of the technical issues, but you can all listen without any problem over the telephone. Whenever there's a problem, call this number. You can go to the archives. You can download shows. You can listen live. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. And yesterday, when we did have a technical issue, 9,265 additional listeners went over to listen over the telephone, and they joined 486,826 who listened last month over the telephone alone. So it's a fail-safe. It's good. Now let's go to our, we'll go over to our emails and, or go over, excuse me, to our phones, see who's there, and we'll take your calls. We have Luann Panessi on. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, we've certainly gotten a lot of calls about your upcoming retreat, and we're happy to speak to everybody. I did get a bunch of emails about this new news item about President Obama thinking he's going to make an executive order in terms of banning guns again. So, of course, there was a lot of emails coming to me about that. People are very concerned. But most importantly, it sounds like, you know, a lot of audience members are very, very happy that you're having another retreat coming up the end of September, because they weren't able to make the last couple of retreats.
Let me just explain what this is. This is a fundraiser for WPFW, where people are listening right now in Washington, D.C., and have been for 30 years, and WBAI in New York, where people are listening right now for much longer than that, 37 years. And they all know that BAI and PFW have had some financial challenges. And they also know it's very difficult for either station to have the cash flow to pay all their bills and to pay for their premiums. I wished it were not so, but it is the case. However, here is the good part of this. I told Bertold and I told John Hughes the best premium after they heard what we had done with a fun retreat for KPFK is make the retreat the premium. That way, no matter what your cash flow, you're getting cash. You don't have to pay anything. And the people get their premium. And they love the idea. And we just did it last week. It was an enormously successful week. And so much so that at least 3/4 of the people who called in could not get in. We just didn't have the space. It was filled, as you know. So I said the only other time I have my schedule is the first 2 weeks of October, because that's the time I normally take a little retreat for myself. So I'll set that aside and I'll work with people. So once again, we've collected our crew, John Q and yourself and Shelley and Valentina and all the other individuals, Jimmy, who's great, and Magdalena, all the people, Claire Adams, they're all coming. And once again, we're going to be there to help make a wonderful 1 or 2 weeks for people. Now, what's going to happen? They're going to be able to first juice all day long, detoxify their body. They're going to rejuvenate. They're going to get yoga and meditation and healing energy work. They're going to get art as healing therapy workshops every day, which are wonderful if you've never taken them. They're going to commune with nature. They're going to be in some of the most beautiful physical surroundings in the world. They're going to be able to do yoga overlooking a lake with swans, nature walks, down pastures where there's beautiful cattle and horses out into the countryside. They're going to eat the most delicious gourmet vegan meals. There's going to be raw food workshops, farming workshops, homesteading workshops, hydroponic workshops. I do a lecture every night at 2 or 3 hours, and I take on the hard issues. I ask people what's the most difficult problem in the world that you cannot have an answer to, haven't had, and I take those on. That's what I do. And people come away rejuvenated, revived, with new insight and new direction of where to go with their life. That's why this is so important. This isn't just a holiday. It isn't just a retreat. It isn't just a, you know, de-stress, detox. It isn't just dealing with some anxiety and depression issue. It's not just about losing some weight. All that happens. This is about starting over. This is about really rebalancing your life. So this is a life changer. And you hear people in their testimonies. We have over 50 recorded testimonials where people say, this has changed my life. This was the most important week of my life. You hear people saying this from all walks of life, from a man who was 92, who came from the Dominican Republic and had swollen ankles. And for 3 years, nothing had helped his swollen ankles. His doctors couldn't. His medicines couldn't. 3 days long later, the swelling was gone. All kinds of wonderful things happen. You're really communing with nature. So that's what this is about. And it's a fundraiser. It's going to help pay the salaries. It's going to help pay the transmitter, the transponder, the rent at the Empire State Building. It's going to pay to see that the station is able to stay another month on the air. That's what it is. And you get your premium. Now, the cost of it is $2,000. Now, that may seem like a lot, and for some people it is. But imagine what you're getting for that. That's everything. The only extra is if you want a massage, that's separate. But everything else included, all your counseling, your workshops, everything, your hotel, everything's included. All right, you pay for your airfare to get there. You can get cheap tickets, and it's easy to get to. But then that helps the station. It helps you. So if you want to come, and Luann will be counseling people every day. Luann, you want to give your number, please?
Sure. It's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. And one thing, this people that should not call are people that are angry, bitter, blaming. You know, those people we don't want. We bless them on their journey, but one of the reasons I think that it's so successful is because the people that come down are happy, they're excited, they're enthusiastic about making positive changes in their lives, and they're not interested in blaming anyone for their problems.
I agree. You got to start your journey with the right mindset, or no matter what you're given, the best of everything, it won't work. And a lot of people right now are angry. Their anger is focused in, their anger is focused out, they're rageful, and getting people out of their rage is not, it's not for me to do. I'm there to help open a door for people who want to be a better person, happier, healthier, to live their life with greater meaning and purpose, and to reharmonize their energies for the next chapter in their life. I'm not there to sit and, you know, commiserate with someone's defective story. That's not what this is about. There are other places that you could go to do that. There's some yoga ashrams upstate New York. There's some yoga retreats upstate New York that you go to, and that they can deal with. This is not what this is about. We're contributing our energy. We know what works, and that's why we've had so much success. So if you want to help the station, help yourself, one last time, give your number, Luann.
Well, it's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. And I am getting a lot of calls, but I return every single phone call, so just be patient, okay?
And these 2 weeks will be filled. Now, I promised that I would give just some of the more bizarre SWAT team police state things that are happening. And the whole idea that we're having SWAT teams deal with a problem when we could just have a public official go out and see what the problem is and resolve it peacefully. Here are just a few. One, armed SWAT team raid an animal shelter in search of a baby deer. Quote, shelter employee Ray Schultz was working in a barn for the Society of St. Francis Animal Shelter in Wisconsin when a swarm of squad cars arrived with a search warrant for a baby fawn. And there were 9 agents and 4 deputy sheriffs. They were all armed to the teeth, says SWAT. And they went in and they found the baby, and evidently the baby didn't have the right permits, so they shot it and put it over the shoulder and carried it out. A SWAT team killed a baby deer, little fawn. That is what happened. True story. It was reported on WISN 12 News. So I guess now it takes a SWAT team with AK-47s to kill a baby innocent deer. Shame on them. But there is no shame on them.
Place to harbor you and me. Our love is like a ship on the ocean.
Sorry. We're having, I'm right in the midst of a major storm, so my ASTM went out. And finally, a SWAT team raids a man's home in search of koi fish. An Austin whole SWAT team destroyed the home of a man in search of a missing koi fish, which someone had taken from a botanical garden. 12 officers came to the house, and they drew their guns, held his 17-year-old son and his girlfriend and him at gunpoint while they searched for the koi. They didn't find it. Of course, they didn't apologize. Once again, SWAT teams don't apologize for anything. And there was a peaceful demonstration of monks, and according to KETV, Tibetan monks on a peace mission were apprehended by a SWAT team in Iowa because they didn't have the right permit. And the SWAT teams raided an Amish farmer twice for selling unpasteurized milk. And then they went into a gay bar. Now this should get someone's interest. In Georgia, federal SWAT team raided a gay rights group. 30 officers, all in SWAT, all fully armed, went into a gay bar, put all the people on the floor, and held them there and to see what they were doing when they couldn't find anything wrong, no evidence of, quote, public sex, drugs, or weapons, they left. So, since when do we allow a SWAT team or anyone else to go into a gay bar? And this is what's happening. So I just want to let you know, when you think that it's okay out there, take a look again. This is going on in America today. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for listening. Now let's say hello to you, Therese Lead. Hi, you, Therese.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about the dramatic difference in the way the British and Americans are dealing with the issue of Syria.
Excellent. We need to look at that. And does anybody really care what the British think about anything?
Whether they do or not, I'm pointing to the importance. The important difference is the process, and that is something we need to pay attention to.
Okay, because let us not forget who it was who endorsed the legitimacy of weapons of mass destruction. That was Tony Blair in an infamous memo. And we saw that the memo was wrong, it was lies, and he was never held accountable for it. We look forward to your program. Yatrice Lead,
thank you.
Right now. Please stay with us.